two on the move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
Up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we get smarter about quarterback play. Jordan Reed from ESPN joins us to talk not just about this year's class, but about the evaluation process of teams and GMs in 2024 and how that's changed over the course of years, the disconnect between arm talent and actually playing the position of quarterback, and a whole lot more. You don't want to miss that. Plus, we'll talk about the class. And finally, a new signing. I'll break down all things tape and what you need to know about Tier Tart from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast. My apologies for not having the Tier Tart breakdown on the Monday episode of Drive Time. That would have been the original plan, but last Monday, I ate a damn Starburst, and it pulled the crown of my tooth off, and come to find out that crown had been misplaced in some way, and so over the course of like 8 years, a amount of decay built up on that tooth, and so I've made several trips to the dentist, just had the root canal on Monday at 10 a.m. and was recovering all day, so didn't have a chance to come update that for you guys. We are on the mend. We are feeling better, and we are watching football tapes. The Dolphins add Tier Tart. What a name that is, by the way. One of the best names in football. Since we last talked, and stop me if you have heard this part before. Former UDFA, super, super quick first step, plays with urgency and power. I mean, the theme on the type of player that the Dolphins have been adding since the arrival of Mike McDaniel. Just go read up on Tart and his time with the Titans, an early fan favorite that won the hearts of the fan base by hitting immediately in camp, in preseason, in year one as a UDFA, and our second player from the school now, another Florida International University Panther here with the Miami Dolphins. His final year there in college, he had 10.5 tackles for loss, which led the team, and 1.5 sacks. But how about this, though? His high school that he went to in the Philadelphia area didn't have a football team, and a local football coach saw him on the hardwood, well, the blacktop, playing hoop and said, yeah, I need that on my football field. Remember like in the 90s, or I guess this would have been 2000, so that's not the same thing, but like, you know, in the old days, you could just like walk around and be like, oh, that guy looks like he can play football. I can probably get him to come play football for my school because there's no like, you know, he's not being recruited by social media yet or whatever. I digress. Anyway, he transfers schools. He then winds up at ASA College in New York. What's that? Who knows? But quits after 6 games in which he recorded 5 sacks in those 6 games because of a death of a family member. Heartbreak, like hardship, man. He eventually wound up at Ellsworth CC in Iowa. Then he tore a meniscus after 2 games. Like, McDaniel talks about this all the time, how guys are hardened by their experiences, how they're shaped by their experiences. A lot of the guys that come through this locker room, McDaniel looks for guys who kind of had a similar route as himself. What was the league that McDaniel was in? The AFL or the UFL or the BTCFL? Like, who cares? It was a league that no one cared about, and he had to work his way back into the NFL. And the reason that I wanted to bring this background up, and he went to FIU in 2018. The reason I wanted to bring up the background was I noticed this on his tape, and this from NFL.com's Lance Zierlein and his scouting report. Compact 3 technique who plays with explosive power to make up for his average quickness. Tart isn't slow or unathletic, but he doesn't have the first step quickness to be a disruptive gap shooter or consistent pass rusher. He can be a little inconsistent with the timing and placement of his hands, but he has the power and leverage to control single blocks with better technique. Tart can be a slow starter, but a strong finisher from rep to rep. His upside and brand of nasty could give him a chance to find NFL work at some point. What's really interesting to me about that entire collection of words, but really the first sentence, is that it's already wrong twice in that first sentence. I'm not saying it was wrong then, but Tart doesn't play a lot of 3 technique. He's almost always in the nose, and he's not slow off the football, like at all. Like, a good reminder that players can change and develop, right? But what else do you notice about that report? Some nasty to his game. I've read that about Brewer, Driscoll, Gallimore. It seems like there's a prerequisite in the trenches down here in Miami to be kind of a tough SOB. And looking at the report, like being inconsistent and getting better technique, he has done that because you watch his tape and it's all over his tape. Consistent reps, consistent wins with his hands, good grip strength, the ability to deconstruct blocks. In that same NFL.com report, an anonymous coach in the NFC said he didn't think that his team would draft Tart because of the pandemic and the lack of a medical report for him, but that he could become a player in the league one day. Just makes you think if he had had a shot, if not for his final season and being 2019, during the pandemic, and what a crazy time that was for a lot of players who, you know, coming from a small school and from CC, like those are the kind of guys that kind of got screwed that time of our crazy, crazy universe here. Some numbers on him: played a career high 520 snaps in 2022. Last year was right around his sophomore season total, 378 and 344 alike. He played .155 as a rookie. That's nearly 1,400 snaps, and they have been split with a 54% rate against as a pass rusher. It's actually the exact same career pass rush rate as Benito Jones, who I think is a better run defender in his game than I think Tart's better at both run and pass rush, but for Benito, I think that his strength is the run game, whereas Tart, maybe it's a little bit of both, I don't know. But he has 43 pressures, 2.5 sacks, 14 quarterback hits, 79 tackles, 7 passes defensed. He made 16 TFLs. I mean, when he wins fast. 48 stops and a pick. And that 2022 season produced an approximate value of 8. He was a 4 last year and a 4 in 2021. He was a 1 as a rookie. So that 2022 tape is really damn good. When you go back and plug that on, the first thing that jumps out to me is the first step quickness. Like, that's why I laughed about the report originally. From there, he just continues to pick up and build speed. He's super quick and shifty. He uses that jittery side-to-side action with a lengthy wingspan and very good technique to shift and move and contort his man to get the advantage on him regardless of the angle that he rushes with. The Titans would usually line him up as a one shade of some sort. Think of either shoulder of the center. He's off of that either left or right shoulder of the center playing either A-gap. And when there's a backside run, or when he's on the backside, I should say, where that's the weak side of the formation, less players to that side, he would align at this 45-degree angle where it's like, I don't even care about getting a rib shot from the left guard right here. I'm going to go stab the center and control this block, this backside A-gap, so that I can detach no matter what happens with the center. And then he would work to get that displacement or knockback, usually shocked him and took him back a couple of steps or so towards the strong side. And then if the play would roll out strong, he has the ability to work to get over the top with that hand placement, with that swim. You can't engage and swim over the top if you don't have really good initial hand striking, and that's what he has. And he has a good array of moves to do it, and the most notable is that swim with a quick swipe to the ribs, swim over the top, and get yourself in pole position, and then use the quickness to outrun them. But then he could also play the backside cutback lane and has such good eyes and feel for when to hold the block, get off and go make the play. Very, very good, smart player that way. Then, of course, other times he's aligned to the strong side of the formation, and his ability to penetrate the A-gap from there would then force backs to either extend their track and bubble. And if a back bubbles, that's what you want, man. Take more steps backwards, allow our cavalry 3 steps now to arrive because of that. He would do that on the front side runs, or if they kept it to the backside, he has the angle kind of ability to, you're kind of like an edge rusher who bends the arc to get upfield quickly, penetrate, win immediately across your man's face, and then wind it back and flag it back down on the backside. Extremely quick, plays through power in the lower half of his body. He's just a squatty body, dumpy type of player. Utilizes a very nice wingspan that he offers to deconstruct those blocks. And if you go back and watch the 2022 tape, he and David Long had quite the propensity for getting off blocks of much, much bigger players. I'm really curious to see what his role here is going to be. He played mostly 0-1 technique with the Titans. There was some 3 technique in there, but I don't know. I can't imagine he plays the nose too frequently because that's just not what Weaver has done in the past. He's always had 330-pound plus guys in those roles. I would imagine he plays a lot more 2-2-eye and 3 technique here, and that's definitely, you know, your nose pass rusher on nickel rushing downs. Again, super quick off the ball. Perhaps a platoon with Benito and then additional snaps as a 2 or 3 in base downs might be kind of the role I carve out here for T.R. Tart in Miami. It's obviously tough to stack up double teams when you're flat out outweighed, but damn it, if he doesn't give centers one-on-one just a world of headaches with a nice combination of speed and power. So maybe he can play that nose tackle a lot. I don't know. I'm conflicted there. I think he figures to serve something of an Adam Butler role as a nickel rusher. Do you guys remember Adam Butler? He was so fast off the ball that really would help stack up gaps and create runs for the linebackers in the blitzing scheme of Flores and Boyer. And Tart has that kind of quick and ability to open up lanes. And that combination of skills is what makes him so effective. He can load up a bull rush and take you right to the quarterback that way. Then the next snap, he can swipe and swim. And you're over your skis because you committed to initiating contact originally to try to cut him off at the pass and not let him get that power and that lower half extension into you. If they double and down block him, he probably doesn't really do much for you in that regard. That's kind of the weakness, I think, here. But that also happened with the $100 million man in the cold game in Kansas City last year, too. Like, not to be disparaging, but no player wins every time. And those types of blocks, when executed well by the offense, are very tough to get around. But that's really the negative I saw on his tape. Maybe he gives some ground on doubles, which is why he probably gives up his spot on obvious rundowns in heavy personnel. Like, if it's 12, 13 personnel, 21 personnel, probably get a bigger body in there to play for Tart. He can come back on when they go to 11 personnel. I don't know, guys. I sound like a broken record here with this stuff, but these kind of free agent signings that good teams make, these are it. That's what they do. They don't go out and make a splash at the top of the market. They just continue to stack up good quality football players for affordable cost, value, not paying out the nose for one player, continuously building your depth. I just think we are such a deeper football team than we were a season ago. And I look at this D-line rotation and look, like, there's still the draft and UDFAs and post June 1 and cut down day in August. There are multiple avenues ahead to adding to the roster, but look at this D-line. Like, ideally, Phillips, Chubb, and Sealer all play 800 snaps, right? But who knows what 2 and 15 are ready for. But healthy, ideally, which is what you anticipate getting at some point this year, at some point in the season for discussion's sake, we'll call it 800 snaps. And if you need 5,000 snaps out of five spots, like Shaq Barrett's good for a solid 500 or 600, give or take. And then I think that Tart is another 500-plus level player, which takes us to like 3,100 snaps. So 1,900 snaps for Benito, Gallimore, Hand, Harris, and Cam Good. And then whatever comes of the draft slash the rest of the offseason and the roster additions there. That's a very, very 101 way of looking at it, but you've certainly created a situation where someone could step forward and seize a bigger role, or you do now have the fallback option of making it up in the aggregate. I think about it all the time. How fortunate we were to not have injuries last year to guys like Sealer and Wilkins because almost nobody else played. What would you have done? Would it have been Brandon Peely and Deshaun Hand in those roles? Now you have guys that can step in and fill those roles and feel a lot more comfortable and confident about it. So that's the T.R. Tart skinny. I think we'll hear from him at the media eventually this week. I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but we'll keep you posted on that. Let's go ahead and take our first break right here. Come back on the other side and hear from the fantastic Jordan Reed of ESPN. That's next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Joined today by one of my favorite recurring guests on the show. I say that for all my guests, but I mean it once again today. Jordan Reed, ESPN. Jordan, appreciate you taking some time today out of your busy schedule, man.
No problem. Thanks as always. It's always a pleasure. It feels like we're doing this every year now at the Combine and now here with just under, a month until the draft now. So it's fun times, definitely for the Dolphins now too.
I'm very routine-based, Jordan. I like to do things a certain way and stick to that routine as best I possibly can. Before we start talking about these quarterback prospects in this draft class, I wanted to ask you, are you getting any sleep this month? I imagine for you, I know you're a father of two beautiful girls. With the month of April ramping up the draft process, do you sleep at all during April?
No, not at all. It's kind of like, you know, this as being a father of toddlers, you kind of have to keep one eye open when you do go to sleep just because there's draft news that happened. All different times of the night and during the day. So it's kind of like the lead up to Christmas. And that's what I compared with when I talk to everybody. So Christmas is always on the 25th. Then the draft is on the 25th this year. So once that month of December hits, it's kind of like the lead up to Christmas for me.
Well, I can't wait for it either. And we have Jordan on the podcast at the Scouting Combine to give you kind of a Dolphins overview. But today I wanted to ask Jordan on the podcast to talk about the quarterback class because, quite frankly, Jordan, we don't spend much time on that here, which I think is a very beneficial place for an organization to be in. I remember for a long time for the Dolphins, every year you had to examine all the quarterbacks and review all options because since Marino had retired, they didn't have one for a long time. But now we do have a pretty good guy in Tua Tagovailoa. So I wanted to start here and ask you a couple of general philosophy questions about just how you view scouting and also a very intricate question about this year's class. And what I want to go to here is kind of a two-part question, but I'll start with this. I wanted to ask you, who is the best anticipatory thrower, going back to Tua Tagovailoa, in this year's class? Like, who do you think it is? Because, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but when I watch the tape on a lot of these guys, a lot of the throws were see it and then rip it. I'm curious if you think that's accurate, and who do you think is the best at playing on time and in rhythm in this year's quarterback class?
Overall, I actually would say Bo Nix of Oregon for this question, just because of all the guys who I thought was the most decisive, and then also attaching what I call their eyes to their feet. So everything moving in motion and in rhythm. I would go with Bo Nix just because everything is just so easy for him, especially in the short to intermediate areas. And he's really polished. I mean, the guy had a 77% completion percentage last year, which was the tops in the country. He has a lot of experience, too. I think that's another factor that he has over every other college quarterback or quarterback coming out in this just class. He plays 61 career games, which is a lot for a quarterback. That is a wealth of experience for a college quarterback, something that we have never seen before as far as that many or that high number of starts. And he's a player that's really reinvented himself when he first started his career at Auburn. A lot of people wrote him off after that, and then he goes to Oregon, and he looks like a completely different player now.
That's really interesting because, and this is a follow-up to the first part of the two-part question, so forgive me for getting off the rails already here, but, you know, I see these mock drafts, and should Miami consider a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix? And I keep thinking to myself, like, you know, Tua came out and he was 21 years old, and these guys are 23, 24 years old. They're going to be that age come this summer. I'm curious, is that a knock on prospects that have played that many games in college? Like you mentioned that he reinvented his game, but is there a sense in scouts' minds that sometimes, like, he should dominate these 20-year-olds because he's 23, 24-year-olds? Like, how does the age play into Michael Penix and Bo Nix's value?
I actually get that question a lot, and I've asked general managers, I've asked executives and people that actually work inside of the league, and the only time age becomes a bad thing, and usually it's called a red flag on teams' draft board, is when they're turning 25 going into their rookie season. So as long as they're not 25 going into their rookie season, it's not considered a red flag. Now, I haven't talked to every team in the league. Every team is going to be different based on how they view it, but the teams that I have talked to, the only time they usually red flag a prospect for their age is when they turn 25 going into their rookie season. And I've never seen experience be a bad thing. And right, not just talking about football, but in life in general, the more experience that you can get, the more reps that you can get in college, I've always seen that as a valuable thing, just because what you always worry about with these young guys, whether they're 21 or 24 entering their first year in the NFL, is how are they going to adjust to the speed of the game? Well, the more experience that you have, the more of those in-game reps that you have, is going to better prepare you for the NFL game. Now, everybody is different. Everybody has different slopes as far as how long it takes to adjust to the speed of the game. But those reps, they definitely are significant, especially you have some guys like a Bo Nix that may have been in a different system or maybe have just not have been up to par during the earlier years of their career. But the back end of their career, things click for them. So that's always what you want to see. When did it click for these prospects? Sometimes it's in their freshman or the sophomore season, then they go on to finish their career strong. Or other times there's like a Joe Burrow that had a monumental leap, or even a Jaden Daniels that had a monumental leap during their final season.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance would love to have had two more years of college quarterback experience to get themselves better prepared for the NFL, because when you don't work out early in the NFL, you take the kind of that backup role and you have to work your way back in the way like Baker Mayfield did, for instance. So very fascinating stuff. And that kind of provides a good segue into my next question, which is the original part two of the first question. I was curious, again, your philosophical thought here, because to that point about a Zach Wilson, a Trey Lance, you can have all the traits you want in the world, and that goes back to the anticipation question as well. But if you can't see it, you just can't play. Like, I remember Josh Rosen down here in training camp, preseason, regular season. It was the same every time. It was just late, late, late. And so it didn't work out for him. So my question is, how do NFL scouts approach a player who has all this physical talent, but we haven't really seen them, you know, for lack of a better term, actually play the quarterback position? Does that make sense? Like, how should we scout a traitsy quarterback without some of the polish? For instance, like you talked about there, like your top of 2020 class, Tua had that polish, right? Burrow at the end of the year, at the end of his career, had that polish. How do you view these quarterbacks that have that high end talent, but the polish isn't there yet?
That's a really good question. How much time do we have here? I can go on and on.
As long as you want, brother.
Because there's so many layers to this question. I ultimately think it comes down to patience with development and then just the situation that they're entering. And a lot of times what we see with these young quarterbacks is that they're getting rushed into a lot of situations and they're not ready. And it doesn't matter if you have A-plus physical talent or physical traits across the board. If you don't have the proper development and the proper infrastructure and surroundings, you could somewhat ruin that quarterback. And that's not to say the 49ers ruined Trey Lance or the Jets ruined Zach Wilson, but I just don't think they were ready when they were rushed into action or when they had to go into the game, just because of those lack of reps. And then also just the impatience with their development. We've seen this with Mac Jones a little bit too during the earlier parts of his career, where he had, I think, a decent rookie season. And then after that, the infrastructure around it, they just weren't able to build it up for him. So a lot of it is timeline as far as with coaches and GMs. How long do they have to be patient with those quarterbacks? And also, what is the developmental curve or circumstances that they're entering into? And a lot of times with NFL teams, they just don't have the patience or the time to develop those guys. So if you invest that time and you're patient with those guys, you really could reap the fruits of your labor.
And a great example of that is Austin Jackson, who's already on the roster right now, just because you have to have that patience. And not just talking about Austin, but just in general of where they were patient with him. I believe he was drafted at 20 or 21 years old, was labeled as raw as far as a pass protector, but run blocking was another area of where he needed to improve. But those reps and just that patience with him and those in-game reps were so valuable of where he ends up, and he goes on to be a solid starter for the Dolphins now. So it's just a matter of having patience with them, not rushing their development, but everybody isn't able to benefit from that, just because there's a different timeline as far as the leash, as far as these coaches and these GMs are on. So there's a lot of times of where they feel pressure to where they have to rush those guys into action.
There's an interesting dynamic there among those two quarterbacks, Lance and Zach Wilson, and also Austin Jackson, because I was thinking about this as you're answering that question. Those quarterbacks both were part of like the pandemic era quarterbacks, right? They had a year that was abbreviated because of, you know, the pandemic that cost them games and starts and valuable experience, especially in the case of Trey Lance, who had his entire season wiped out that year. And for Austin Jackson, missed a big chunk of his career because of the bone marrow transplant with his sister. So it makes sense that these guys missing those college reps maybe takes a little bit longer to develop into the pro game. Jordan Reed, ESPN, my guest today. I have another two-part question for you, Jordan. That's what I'm doing here on the podcast today, apparently. But I want to let you know ahead of time, because you can answer as you see fit with both questions posed. So my question at the top is how you stack this class. Everyone has their own rankings, top five or however far you want to go. But I'm also wondering who you think is that fifth quarterback, assuming you do have Williams, Daniels, May, and McCarthy as your top four. Maybe you don't. But who is that fifth quarterback, and what's the range for where that quarterback might come off the board after those first four?
Well, I think it's between two guys. We've already touched on one already, in Bo Nix of Oregon, who had a magical season last year. And then also Michael Penix Jr. of Washington, who's had a really good past two seasons after facing a ton of adversity during his first 4 years of his career while he was at Indiana before coming over to Washington. It's tough to get a gauge on where those guys are going to go, just because there's so many mixed opinions about them, factoring in the age and then also the injury concerns and the mobility with Penix. And then also just how much left is there to uncover with the development of Bo Nix. That's a big question mark about him. Has he really hit his ceiling as far as who he's going to be on the next level? And then how much further does he have left to go as far as how much left to uncover with his development? So that's the big question mark about both of those two guys right now. But depending on who you ask, there's some people that believe Nix could go as high as 12 to the Broncos, while there's some other people that are a little bit more comfortable with him in the back end of the first round or the early second round. I have him as an early second round pick right now, as well as Penix. I have both of those guys as early twos, but also there's a lot of people that the medical situation with Penix came back. He came back with a clean bill of health, and he didn't receive any red flags or anything like that. For those of you that don't know, he's had two ACL surgeries and then also two shoulder operations as well. So that's why he missed those first four seasons when he was at Indiana. And then the last 2 years at Washington, he's basically been healthy. So we do have to give him credit for that. You saw the high-end traits with Penix in that Texas game. That really was a lot of people's introduction to Michael Penix. But then we saw the opposite end of the spectrum with him against Michigan, of where you saw some of those glaring weaknesses come out with him. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they do end up going. But I feel comfortable with four guys going in the first round right now, with those other two guys being toss-ups right now.
Do you go Williams, and then how do you stack? I'm assuming you go Williams first. How do you stack May and Daniels and McCarthy?
So I have it Williams, May, Daniels, and then McCarthy after that. And, you know, that quarterback two discussion as far as what Washington is going to do is going to be really interesting, just because I like putting myself in the shoes of the general manager as well as the head coach when there's debates about a prospect. And I went back and forth a million times with myself and even my colleagues about who they're going to predict as far as who's going to be the second pick right now. And I just go back to the Dan Quinn success with Matt Ryan and their Super Bowl run before they ultimately fell short, unfortunately. He's had experience with Dak Prescott. And then Adam Peters has had experience with Brock Purdy and then also Jimmy Garoppolo. So those guys are more in the mold of Drake May. Drake May is a little bit more mobile than all those guys. But as far as your prototypical pocket passers that are consistent with winning inside of it and then also have those A-level traits that we talked about a little bit earlier. So that makes me favor that they could go May, but also putting myself in Dan Quinn's shoes as a former defensive coordinator, which quarterback would give you the most troubles when you're game planning for those types of guys? And I just go back to Jaden Daniels potentially being more of a headache from a game planning standpoint, just because the added in mobility and then just his improved pocket patience from inside of the pocket. So it could go either way. I just went back and forth with it right there. So it is a really, really tough decision, but I do have May ranked slightly higher than Daniels right now.
Well, that's why I wanted to have you on, because I love the level of nuance you show for trying to figure out what teams might prefer that way. And my last question before my final Dolphins quarterback question here is just real quick with Jaden Daniels, like that reel of him taking big hits at his size, it's kind of alarming. Are teams worried about that? Are they going to teach him how to play the game differently? Because I can't imagine he survives taking hits like that at the next level.
Yeah, I mean, he has to learn. And I just think it's a matter of his competitive desire, just trying to get every single yard on every single scramble. So the big thing that Jaden has to learn and what I want to see him develop in his game is that when he does decide to run, he's tucking it to become a runner automatically. He's not looking down the field to see which defenders engaged on him and they're running up to him and they're leaving his guys wide open, just because on tape, and you see this plenty of times with him, when he tucks the ball to run, his eyes drop down immediately and he tucks the ball and he immediately becomes a runner no matter what. So the next layer to uncover of his game is running to make plays as a passer. That's where I think he becomes really, really dangerous. And this is something that Lamar Jackson also added into his game a couple of years ago, of where he became really lethal, just because you don't know when he tucks the ball, he could reset and reset his eyes and reset his feet to become a passer now as well once the defense engages on him. So not only does Jaden Daniels have to learn to slide or get out of bounds and protect himself, but also there's some times of where you can indicate that you are a runner, but also go ahead and reset, get your eyes up and become a passer, just because there's so many guys that are open, just because everybody in the stadium has you circled when you tuck to run the ball. But once he resets his eyes and he becomes a passer once again after that, that's when he becomes really, really dangerous and unpredictable once he tucks the ball.
And those sandlot football plays can typically be the ones that spring the big one, the big touchdown that changes the game. We'll go ahead and close here in a similar vein that we opened with, because you and Matt Miller just published a really cool dual article on ESPN Plus where you guys alternated landing spots for the quarterbacks throughout the entire class, not just the first round, all seven rounds. And again, never a certainty in the draft. If you try to assume something's going to happen, you're probably going to be wrong. But I do feel pretty confident saying the quarterback is probably off the menu for Miami at 21 and 55, and the next pick is not until 158 in the fifth round. Jordan, I have another two-part question for you. Give me a quarterback you like in that range, and the second part is bonus points if there's a guy that you think fits the Mike McDaniel, the Kyle Shanahan, the Matt LaFleur, the Sean McVay, who fits this system the best as a potential day three developmental quarterback.
Well, one I think they're going to be big fans of is Michael Pratt of Tulane. He had a lot of buzz coming into the year, but he battled some injuries last season, and scouts really hated that he missed that Ole Miss game. I believe it was their second game of the season. A lot of evaluators had that one circled as what I call a resume game for him, just to see how he would play against an SEC opponent, but he unfortunately missed that game. But if you go back and watch the USC tape a couple of years ago, he was phenomenal in that game, and he's a prototypical pocket passer, about a 6'3", 215 pounds. Does a really good job of being decisive from the pocket, really accurate, but he's just not a mobile guy at all. So being in Mike McDaniel's system, a system that really puts an emphasis on the middle of the field, RPO, some play action here and there, I think Pratt could really do well in that type of scheme. And not saying he's going to turn into this guy, but it really reminds me of Kirk Cousins when he was coming out of Michigan State. Kirk ended up being a fourth round selection. I think Pratt could go somewhere in that fourth or fifth round range that could end up outplaying his draft spot down the road.
Really, really good stuff. Jordan Reed, ESPN. You can find his work there. Check out that story on ESPN Plus. Jordan, thank you as always at Jordan_Reed on social. And where are you going to be on draft night, man? You're going to be in Detroit, Rock City?
Yeah, I'll be in Detroit. I'm getting there a day early this year so I can get settled in and just focus on my draft board and studying and seeing how it all turns out. I'm excited to see how it all shakes out.
Appreciate you, man. You're the best. Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks as always, Travis.
And away he goes. Always good stuff there with Jordan Reed from ESPN. We will be doing these every episode as we go along here, getting you guys ready for the draft, which now is just a couple of weeks away. I think it's, what, 15 days as of this podcast coming out away from the 2024 NFL draft. Our first-round draft pick in 3 years as well. Assuming we stay in that spot, we'll find out what happens come draft night. All right, before we get out of here, Masters this weekend, right? One of the best weekends of the year for the golf fan. I'm taking Jordan Spieth. I know it's probably a bad pick, but he's kind of my favorite to watch because my friends always call me the Jordan Spieth of our local golf troop here, and that I'm a bit of a head case. If I hit a couple of bad shots, I'm never playing golf again. If I hit back-to-back birdies or pars, I'm probably going to make the tour. So Jordan Spieth, I side with Jordan Spieth and the mental gymnastics and up and downs that he has throughout the course of a given round. Cannot wait to watch that tournament. Also, the Premier card coming out here soon. If you guys are South Florida based and you're a golfer, let me know, because my Premier card troop, which is get you good green fees, cheap green fees to all the nice courses in South Florida. One of my guys in the troop is no longer part of that troop, and so I need more people to play golf with to maximize the amount of golf that I want to play. So if you are a golfer in South Florida with a Premier card, get at me. In the meantime, that is going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Follow me on social at Wingfield NFL, the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice, the Nolan Keller episode just went up yesterday. Very good stuff there from those guys. Check out the YouTube channel for all the free agent chats, media availabilities, Dolphins Today, which your boy is hosting for the first time in my career. You don't want to miss that. Also, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Carolina Cameron, Daddy, coming home. Yeah.